This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we'll meet the host and executive producer of a new public television miniseries called Family Pictures USA. They're in town meeting people from all walks of life across Southwest Florida. The show, which is like a cross between StoryCorps and Antiques Roadshow, explores neighborhoods and cities through the lens of the family photo album. But first, the Annie E. Casey Foundation has been conducting its annual Kids Count study data every year since 1990. The goal is to give state legislators, public officials, and child advocates reliable data to inform policy choices. The 2018 data book was released at noon today. Florida showed improvement in children living in high poverty areas, teen births, and proficiencies in reading and math. The Sunshine State earned an overall ranking of 34th in child well-being. We're joined now by Dr. Noreen Delard. She is the Florida Kids Count Director, to get a sense of how Florida fared this year and what direction the trend lines are heading. Dr. Delard, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you for having me, Julie.
To join our conversation, you can give us a call now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So it's great to have you back, Dr. Delard. Can you tell me a little bit about the history of the Kids Count Survey?
Yes. As you know, Casey has been doing this since 1990. And they use publicly available data, so national data sets like the census from the Department of Education, Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, to arrive at a set of 16 indicators that reflect child well-being and with which they rank the 50 states. These indicators are then categorized into four categories, economic well-being, education, health, and family and community. And so within each of those four categories, there are four individual-level indicators that give a reflection of how kids are doing.
So basically what you do is you take the data that is out there,
yes,
bring it all together, and then have it use the categorizations that you have set up to just kind of get a snapshot of how kids are doing across the country. And this is Florida Kids Count.
This is Florida's Florida data that I'll be talking about. But every state has a Kids Count organization. So my counterparts are responding similarly across the country right now.
All right. So what role do you play as the director? Do you have to oversee the gathering of all this data and how it's put together?
The data that I'm going to talk about today is gathered by the Annie E. Casey Foundation's contractors, and our job as Kids Count grantees is to lift up those data and to disseminate them. As Florida Kids Count, we also do this kind of data collection, and you and I have talked in the past about our County Child Wellbeing Index, mm-hmm. which uses Florida data sources. So these are all national data sources, and so we don't actually do these analyses. The Casey Foundation and its other subcontractors do those.
So this year's data book, before we dive into the numbers and how Florida's doing, it starts by talking about the upcoming census and how underserved groups and kids have historically been undercounted. Can you explain why that is?
The issue, we're very concerned because there was a substantial undercount in 2010 and that we fear that it will happen again because one thing is that children are harder to count as adults, especially very young children. They're not as visible to the public.
Yeah, they don't have credit cards and mortgages.
Right. They may not go to school if they're very young. So they're not quite – they don't come quite to the level of attention that older children and adults do. There may be either economic or cultural reasons that multiple families live together, or in the case of blended families, there might be confusion as what constitutes the household and who to count. There's also areas that tend to be undercounted, large apartment or public housing complexes sometimes make it difficult for surveyors to find families. So those are things that we at least know something about. This go-round, there's two new levels of complexity that I would say are added to that. Immigration is the most obvious, and the addition of the citizenship question to the census. There's great concern that it will have a chilling effect on people's willingness to disclose and complete the census, even though we should be counting all residents.
And that's coming up in 2020, right?
April 2020 is the target date. And the other is that the census, the focus will be on getting the census done online as opposed to a paper mail survey that people might be familiar with or a telephone survey. Those will still be an option, but the online is the big focus. And of course, the people least likely to be found are those who are probably may not have access to the internet and things like that. So extra strategies are going to have to be brought into play to engage those people who are hard to count.
And, I mean, you know, there are some implications when you have an undercount, when you don't have an accurate reflection of how many people are in your community. That can change things from amount of representation when it comes to the Electoral College. There are political things that come with that. But as concerns the kids count, how can that impact things? Could it make it look like a brighter picture than it really is if we're missing some of the underserved kids?
It will cause us to lose a substantial amount of federal funding in some programs that are important to the people who are least likely to be counted. And we're talking about billions of dollars for every 1% undercount we experience. So the programs that would be affected are things like Medicaid, Children's Health Insurance, Title IV-E, which covers foster care. Things like Head Start, Title I schools are all tied to enumeration. The federal government uses the census to figure out how much money Florida should get for these supports for families and children.
Well, it sounds like it would be a money saver for the federal government to undercount underserved communities.
Well, that's how the math works.
Yeah, I mean, just straight numbers. But it would kind of shortchange states in some ways if we don't get everybody counted.
In significant ways. We would lose funding.
Well, if you're just joining the show, I'm talking with Dr. Noreen Delard. She is the Florida Kids Count Director. The annual survey compiles data in a number of different categories to give lawmakers, public officials, and child advocates reliable information to help them make policy choices. This year's data book was released earlier today, and if you'd like to join our conversation, you can give us a call now. The number is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So let's get into this data and what came out today. You said that there are categories: economic well-being, education, health, and family and community.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the main ones. So how's Florida doing?
Okay, so this year Florida ranks 34th out of the 50 states.
Did we jump up? I feel like last year it was worse.
It was, but I have to caution you that one of the indicators changed in the health domain, teens who abuse alcohol or drugs. Because of that change, we cannot really compare this year's ranking to last year's in terms for the overall ranking and for the health category. We can compare the three others and 15 out of the 16 indicators. So we just have to use caution with that one.
The health one can kind of skew things. So economic well-being, how are kids doing?
Well, we have improved over the 5 years that were included in this study. We made gains in terms there are fewer children in poverty, more kids who have parents who are regularly employed, people living in fewer children living in households with a high housing cost burden, which means they spend 30% or more of their monthly income on rent or mortgage. And we also improved in teens who are not in school and not working. So we have fewer of those. Children are where they should be. That's all good news. That things are moving in the right direction. We're post-recession. I would point out, however, that we still have 21% of kids who live in areas of who live under the federal poverty guideline. So that's still 859,000 kids. So there's still definitely work to be done in that regard.
The work is not done in that, for sure. And then how about education?
Education was our highest ranking this year. We're at 24, so we're in the top half of the states. As you may have covered previously, we did much better in fourth graders, reducing the number of fourth graders who are not proficient in reading on the National Assessment of Educational Progress. And Governor Scott rightly spoke of that earlier in the spring. We continue to make inroads on high school students graduating on time. We are at 81% of students who are graduating on time, so that's good news. We didn't make any inroads in terms of very young children, 3 and 4 year olds being enrolled in early education.
The pre-K?
In pre-K, yeah. Early childhood education.
Kind of stagnated there, huh?
Yeah, no significant change there, although there was the legislature did fund some additional voluntary pre-K and school readiness for the coming year, as well as funding to improve the quality of the credentials of early childhood staff. And so we're working on it.
So you think that might follow after those things that can't all be done in 1 year?
Yes.
So tell me about the category of family and community. What's measured there?
So family and community, it's similar to economic, but it's really talking about children who live in single-parent families, which have, if you have one adult in the house caregiving, you have likely less, fewer resources available to the family than if you had two caregivers. And we did have more of those, although not significantly more. The good news is that they're, parents are a little better educated. There are more children living in households where, the parent has achieved at least a high school diploma. the teen birth rate continues to fall, which is good for the young ladies as well as their babies if they can delay childbirth a ways. There was no motion on children living in high poverty areas. So children who live in census tracts where 30% or more of the residents live below the federal poverty rate. So even though there's fewer kids in poverty overall, there's still areas where more resources, there may not be adequate resources, schools may be lacking, don't have employment opportunities and that sort of thing. So,
Were there any surprises that jumped out at you in this year's data, or does it kind of seem like things are on trend?
Well, I mean, I think we do continue to chip away, and try. We're working hard to improve things for kids and families. I can't really understate our gains in terms of reducing increasing health insurance coverage for kids, which is hugely important and in which we've made great gains. I don't like to let that one go by. But I think we're making steady progress. In the family and community, there was not much change from last year to this year, and a little bit in terms of economics. So it's not compared to other states, it may not be quite as rapid. Gains are not being seen as quickly.
Yeah, but would it be troubling if everything suddenly looked fabulous? I would wonder if the data was wrong or if that's sustainable.
Well, that's right, and. I would be troubled too, since this is my business to wonder about the numbers. But like when you and I spoke last year, things have not. Yes, we did great, much better in education. But generally speaking, there's the pattern I told you today was the pattern that we saw. a year ago when we were talking.
Yeah, well, it sounds like, and I'll quote, it says, troubling disparities persist among children of color and those from low-income and immigrant families. And the data shows what these disparities are, but it's the context of the why that we're trying to figure out.
Well, and thinking about where are these neighborhoods of concentrated poverty? You know, where are the Title I schools there too? So, I mean, poverty is a big player in that, a big factor in these disparities, but not solely. But they are, you know, kids are in schools that may not, you know, that, you know, work hard to address the needs of all their students, but there are disparities in absenteeism. Mm-hmm. Although those data aren't addressed in this report, but you know, looking at education, Hispanic kids, 3 and 4 year olds are less likely to be in some kind of a early childhood setting. African, and for that variable, African American children are about at the same served as the national average overall.
Well, you do have your challenges kind of laid out for you going into 2020 with a different census situation.
Right. And I mean, looking at, you know, folks in the counties in your neck of the woods, it's, you know, Hendry County is one of the had one of the lowest participation rates in the 2010 census. And, you know, Glades was also you know, had a lower participation rate. So really working hard to engage not only governmental leaders, but the faith community, the service providers to really find ways to help get the word out, to really help people respond to the survey is going to be hugely important down your way. And parts of Lee County, too, when you look at it, are had very low returns.
Yeah, that'll be something we'll definitely be keeping our eye on. But I want to thank you for coming back on the show. Dr. Noreen Dillard is the Florida Kids Count Director, as well as a Research Assistant Professor in the Department of Child and Family Studies in the College of Behavioral and Community Sciences. Boy, that's a mouthful. At the University of South Florida. Woo! She joined us from the studios of WUSF Public Radio in Tampa. Dr. Dillard, thanks again for your time today.
Thank you so much.
When we return, we sit down with the host and executive producer of a new public television miniseries called Family Pictures USA. They're traveling the country collecting stories from people through the lens of their family photo albums. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.